In verse number 43 of the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, Nattang mata pita kaira, anyeva picha nyataka, samma panihitang cittang, seyaso nang tato kare. What neither mother nor father, nor any other relative can do, a well-directed mind can indeed do one greater good. In order to go beyond the fleeting pleasures of life and to experience a more lasting happiness, we need to develop the wisdom and insight to understand the true nature of our lives, our existence, and the world around us. This is where we need the Dhamma or teachings at the supramundane level, the Lokuttara Dhamma, which involves the cultivation and purification of the mind, leading to the understanding and realization of the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path. These teachings lead us to freedom, freedom from the samsaric cycle of birth and death, and ultimately to true happiness. At this point, it is useful for us to consider the three aspects of Dhamma or truth. Firstly, there is Pariyatti, the theory or principles, then Patipatti, the practice, and finally Pativeda, or realization. In other words, in order to gain a complete understanding of the Buddha Dhamma, we first need to study, reflect on, and contemplate its teachings, theories, and principles. For many people, this takes the form of listening to Dhamma talks, reading about the Dhamma, and reflecting on the teachings through the practices of chanting or contemplation. However, we need to be aware that the knowledge of the Dhamma we gain through these means is at the intellectual or conceptual level. In order to translate what we understand at the conceptual level into actual experience and realization of the truth, we need to apply what we have learned through the practice of Dhamma. This should be done through formal practice, such as training the mind through meditation, but it should also extend to informal situations where we need to reflect and contemplate on how the Dhamma relates to our own lives and to apply Dhammic principles in our daily activities. The more we practice and apply the teachings in our daily life, the more we'll be able to perceive the true nature of our existence. This is how we gradually come to realize the Dhamma for ourselves. And when we know the Dhamma, the truth, through our own direct experience, we will gain greater confidence in the teachings until eventually our faith will be unshakable. Having already gained some intellectual understanding of the Dhamma, we then need to train and purify our minds until we can see clearly the truth for ourselves. The intrinsic nature of our mind is pure, bright, and luminous like a stainless mirror. A clear mirror will reflect the truth accurately without distortion. However, through our own lack of understanding and wisdom, we have deposited layers and layers of dirt, the defiling tendencies of greed, hatred and delusion, and their various manifestations, which have stained our mind and blurred our vision. That is why we need to cleanse the mind and to remove these layers of dirt. The purification of mind can be achieved through the practice of mindfulness or Satipatthana meditation. We can describe mindfulness as being present with clear awareness of our body, feelings, and state of mind. It is this practice of mindfulness that will help to convert our intellectual understanding into the experience and realization of the true nature of our lives and our existence. Mindfulness can be practiced in both formal and informal situations in our daily lives. We can start by practicing mindfulness of our own bodies, our breathing, our posture, activities of the body, and so on. As we become more aware of our bodies, we will naturally become more aware of our feelings. Whatever feelings arises, we just observe it and know what the feeling is like, without having aversion to any unpleasant feeling or clinging on to any pleasant feeling. When we are more mindful of our feelings, we will naturally become more aware of our states of mind. On a daily basis, we experience many different states of mind: happiness, joy, excitement, anger, confusion, depression, and so on. And we tend to get so caught up in these emotions that we act on impulse without regard for the consequences of our actions. This is where mindfulness can help, by focusing our minds on the present moment. When desire arises, we know there is desire in the mind. When anger arises, we know we are angry. When we are mindful, clearly aware of the emotion itself, we have already stepped out of that state. This is how mindfulness provides the space to overcome negative emotions and instead cultivate positive ones. The more we cultivate mindfulness, the more we will be clearly aware of what this life is about. We will begin to see how everything is subject to change. Our bodies are changing. Our feelings are changing. Our states of mind are constantly changing. When we see change, we will start to see the unsatisfactory nature of our lives. This will lead us on to understand the truth of life. The true nature of life is what the Buddha fully realized on the night of his enlightenment, the Dhamma known as the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth is the truth of dukkha, which is generally translated as suffering or unsatisfactoriness. It is often misunderstood as life is suffering. But the Buddha did not say that life is suffering. What the Buddha taught was that there is suffering in life. The Buddha defines dukkha in this manner: jatipi dukkha, jarapi dukkha, vyadipi dukkho, maranampi dukkham. Birth, old age, sickness, and death. These are the sources of suffering which are conditioned by the body. Then he goes on, apiehi sampayogo dukkho. People whom we do not like, conditions that are not pleasant to you, these are also not satisfactory. Piehi vipayogo dukkho. Being separated from people whom you love, things that you like, or conditions that are very pleasant to you, is also dukkha. Yang picchang na labati tangpi dukkang. Desires that cannot be fulfilled, not being able to get what you want, is a source of suffering. These are the sufferings you experience at the mental level. They are not caused by the body, but conditioned by the mind. Now, these are all quite easy for us to understand. But the Buddha finally summarizes the meaning of the term dukkha in the following words. Sankittena panchupadana kanda dukkha. In short, the five grasping aggregates are dukkha. What are these five grasping aggregates? The aggregate of form or the physical process, the aggregate of feeling, of perception, of mental formation, and of consciousness. If we analyze ourselves, we have a physical form, our body. We have a mind, which is made up of various mental processes, feelings, perception or cognition, mental formation, and consciousness. The Buddha analyzed the self into these five mental and physical processes that make up our being. And the Buddha said that the five grasping aggregates are dukkha. It is not the five aggregates themselves which are the problem, but the fact that we grasp, we cling on to them, we cling on to this body, we cling on to our feelings, we cling on to our memories, our perceptions, we cling on to our ideas, our views, our mental formations, and we cling on to our consciousness. It is this clinging or attachment to the five aggregates that conditions dukkha to arise. Why? Because these five aggregates, form, feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness, are constantly changing. If we cling on to something which is constantly changing, how not to suffer? This is the profound meaning of the term dukkha, which ordinary people may find difficult to understand. This is why the training of the mind is so important. We then need to contemplate and understand the second noble truth, that the cause of suffering lies in craving. Craving that leads to attachment or clinging and aversion. Craving is a force that drives us to get what we want. When we can get it, we are happy. But this happiness does not last. Having fulfilled our desire for one thing, we then crave for something more. Consider the happiness that you have in your lives. First, you crave to have a partner. You find one and get married. You are happy. Then you crave to have children. When you have children, you crave to bring them up to give a good education. Next, you want them to get married, to have grandchildren. Then you crave for the grandchildren to grow up quickly so that you will have some freedom. This craving goes on and on. It does not end. It goes on from life to life. Furthermore, when we can get what we want, we are happy. But when we cannot get what we want, then we get upset. This is how you see the cycles in your life. When you are young and you can get whatever you want, you have more happiness in your life. As you grow older, and you cannot get what you want, you tend to be more angry and frustrated, sometimes even bitter. This is very important for us to see the connection. It is the craving that leads to attachment and aversion which gives rise to suffering. We need to understand that all our sufferings are conditioned by our greed, our wanting. When we clearly understand and realize that craving is the cause of suffering, we will understand the third noble truth, that there is an end to suffering. And then the fourth noble truth, which is the path which leads to the end of suffering. This path is called the Noble Eightfold Path. Avoiding extremes of self-indulgence on the one hand, and self-mortification on the other, the Noble Eightfold Path consists of right understanding, right thought, right speech, right body action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. These 8 factors may be summarized into 3 stages of training, involving good conduct, mental culture, and wisdom. This is how the worldly Dhamma, which we have explained earlier in terms of good conduct, paves the way for the cultivation of the other path factors, that is, mental culture, or the training of the mind, in order to be able to develop the wisdom, the insights to understand the true nature of life. These 4 Noble Truths are what the Buddha realized on the night of his enlightenment. By fully realizing the true nature of life and of our existence, he was liberated from the cycle of birth and death, from all forms of suffering. It is not easy to realize the deeper meaning of the 4 Noble Truths without having cultivated and trained the mind. The practice of mindfulness in particular will lead us to develop the clarity and sharpness of mind to understand that the 5 aggregates are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and empty of any intrinsic existing self. When we develop our mindfulness to the extent that we can truly see change or impermanence at the experiential level, a transformation takes place. The way we perceive things will be different. Big problems become small problems. Small problems become no problem. We will begin to understand the true nature of life and the world around us. We will see things as they truly are, not as what they appear to be. This will lead us to let go of our tendencies of grasping or craving, leading to greater balance and equilibrium in our minds, and eventually paving the way for us to go beyond all suffering. That is what the Dhamma is for. In the Noble Eightfold Path, we can see how the worldly Dhamma is interlinked with the cultivation of the supramundane Dharma. As we practice the worldly Dhamma more, we build the right conditions for our understanding of the supramundane Dhamma to grow. And as we grow in wisdom and understanding, our ability to practice the worldly Dhamma will also increase.